Every few years, a new artist blows onto the scene and changes the way people consume music entirely. For instance, the artist who released this week's album rose to fame on YouTube. This week's album was the third major release for him. The year he released it included the original Call for Brexit. Hurricane Harvey flooded Houston and Russia was banned from competing in the 2018 Winter Olympics. Today's artist has a thing for math symbols, I guess, since they're on all of his albums. And by now you've probably guessed that the year was 2017 and the artist was Ed Sheeran, and today we're talking about Divide by Ed Sheeran on Two Dudes in Tunes. Welcome to Two Dudes in Tunes, the show that brings two friends together every week to discuss the albums that they hold dear. My name is Wood, I'm one of the dudes involved with the show, and I'm joined, as always, by my good friend Chris to ask the hard-hitting questions. Chris, what is the best Philly cheesesteak you've ever eaten?
Oh, man. Well, unfortunately, like, true Philly cheesesteaks are a big old gap in my culinary experience. So much so to the point that the extent of it is this. I've had Charlie Steakery, which our listeners may recognize as being in many food courts in the mall, or if they're in the military, they've probably seen them at like commissaries. And then my dear old alma mater, Central Christian College of Kansas, we had, and I'm using air quotes, listeners, Philly cheesesteak day, which really translated to like super greasy beef with cheap craft cheese that came in slices of white or yellow. So those are the, and you know what? The sad thing is I got so excited for Philly cheesesteak day at the cafeteria. So excited. When Megan and I first met and were getting together, one of the first things I learned about her was that she hated Philly cheesesteak day.
Really?
Because she has taste buds that function on a level higher than like...
She doesn't think of, like, gourmet is a hot dog.
Yes, exactly. I look at those Nathan's hot dogs and I'm like, ooh, we're busting out the fancy hot dogs today.
Well, for me... I have had the legitimate Philly cheesesteak from Philadelphia. I've also had the New York cheesesteak, which they say is just as good, and it isn't. Ooh. But I will say that the best Philadelphia-style cheesesteak I have ever had in my life is actually here in San Antonio at a gas station that is also a deli called Gino's Deli in San Antonio. And if you look it up on Yelp, it's the number 2 rated cheesesteak place west of the Mississippi. So
that is amazing. You know, Gino's, that name sounds familiar.
I drug you there several times. They were right by our house where I grew up.
What?
Yeah.
How do I not remember this? Well, I guess I'll need to come back and try more cheesesteaks. Oh, darn.
The square of the world here is Chris always got the cheeseburger. He never ordered the cheesesteak.
Oh, I'm deeply ashamed of past Chris. Hey.
For the fun of it today, man. I knew we were going to have this conversation today, so I went there for lunch today and was just like, yep, it's still as good as I remember it.
Oh, man. Well, next time I'm in San Antonio, drag me there and remind me not to get the burger.
I won't let you know.
Don't let me get the hamburger. Well, man, aside from having a fantastic lunch, how are you doing?
It's been an interesting week, for the Johnson household. I came back from a vacation day on Monday. My boss called me at like 8 a.m. and he was like, we need to talk. And I was like, okay. And mind you, it's early August and we're just getting around to doing our mid-year reviews to finalize all of that, to see if we're on track for our bonuses and all that kind of stuff for the year. And he goes, you need to move that from tomorrow to today. We need to do this today at 1 o'clock. And I was like, okay, I can move it. No problem. He goes, yeah. And in about 10 minutes, my retirement letter is going to come out. And effective 2 p.m. today, I'm going on vacation until my retirement is effective.
Whoa.
So, So out of nowhere, my boss was just sayonara. And it's been an interesting kind of transition period because of that, because his retirement, there were a lot of factors that led to it. One of them being the guy has worked for 43 years for the company. And
that'll do it.
That'll do it by itself. There's a lot of other extenuating circumstances going on. And he just kind of woke up one morning and said, I've got a grandkid on the way. I got things that I want to do with my life. I'm done. And so his boss really didn't have any notice. She found out about 20 minutes before I found out. And so it kind of just threw chaos. You know, it's like silly string flying around the office trying to figure out what are we doing with ourselves.
So you said silly string. My first thought was that it was like shit hitting the fan.
I was trying to keep it PG for the kids, but you know.
Well, I like the bleep. listeners, just a peek behind the kimono. Wood does censor things, and sometimes the bleep is just a punchline in and of itself. But yes, silly string everywhere. I can only imagine.
So it's been an interesting one. And that afternoon I came home and was like, I'm going to mow my yard. And I spent like 6.5 hours in my front yard. I was done mowing it in about an hour, but I sat out there and just enjoyed the fruits of my labor for the rest of the afternoon.
A PGA level yard by the time you were done.
We don't even have sprinklers. Our lawn is terrible. So it's a dirt patch that I cut down all the weeds and then I go, look what I did.
So I am lucky in that I did not have to spend money to install a sprinkler system. The house that we bought came with it. Mm-hmm. But that is also a thing that you very literally pay for every month. So my grass is green, but also my bank account is always a little bit lighter after I pay LPNL or whoever.
My grass is green. My bank account is brown.
Yeah, which it's the reverse of the way it usually is around here this time of year. It's been raining so much I had to turn my sprinkler system off. Which, listeners, imagine the driest thing you've ever like seen, and then multiply that by 10. That's usually what West Texas is, and it's been like a verdant paradise for some reason. Sure why. Probably global warming.
It has been a crazy year. It rained here this weekend. It's like, where's all this rain coming from?
Yeah. Well, at least in San Antonio, you kind of expect it. Maybe not necessarily during the month of August, but
not a little bit of
rain anyway.
We generally get rain in March and September, and it hasn't stopped raining since January. So, I mean, it rains at least once a week. So, makes it interesting.
Well, good luck to you. It seems like you are living in interesting times is what it sounds like.
Very colorful. Very colorful. What else is new with you, Chris?
My birthday was a couple weeks ago now, I guess. Jeez, time flies. But it was on a Monday, which is such a drag. And I should have just taken the day off, but I didn't.
Have you ever seen the movie Ed TV, which was an early Matthew McConaughey movie?
Yes. So, I did. We watched that together. You introduced me to that movie and it cracked me up. I was quite a fan.
It's still one of my favorite movies ever, but you saying that your birthday was on a Monday reminds me of the first day Ed takes the camera crew to his work at Blockbuster Video and his boss is standing there. Welcome to work, Ed.
I'm about due for a rewatch of that one. I remember really liking that movie. But yeah, I shouldn't complain though, because we do like monthly breakfast, birthday celebration things at my work. And so I got some breakfast pizza out of it. And that was delicious. I'm 32 in case the listeners care. And I'm a couple years away from beating the good Lord's record. So close. I can taste it. But Megan got me a box of these really huge cookies from a place in town called Insomnia Cookies. Mm-hmm. I don't know where you stand on the like crispy versus chewy debate, but these were warm and soft and gooey and they were just so good.
The ideal cookie is oatmeal chocolate chip.
Which I had one of.
Which, with crispy outer edges, and is totally liquid in the center. Like, oh, give me the gooey middle, so but a little bit of crisp on the outside, I'm happy.
Mm, yeah. Sounds amazing. Well, that was about the way the oatmeal cookie that I had was. And then, let's see, what else? Oh, I found out recently that one of my cousins is moving to Montana, of all places, to take a job as a hunting guide. Which I was thinking about it. We had like a little get together, like a going away get together. My family did. And I realized like most Robinson men wind up spending some time in the Midwest, at least in like my generation. Mm-hmm. It's like, I went off to Kansas. My brother lives in Nebraska right now. And, my cousin is going up to Montana, which I guess is more like the northern Midwest, mm-hmm. but you know, still pretty close. So,
to do probably one of the manliest careers you could possibly get into. I'm jealous of him.
He, this fits him to a T. So he's, my cousin Asher is a real big buff dude. He lifted weights and played football in, high school. And I'm excited for him because he hasn't really known exactly what he's wanted to do. Mm-hmm. Much like myself, he kind of spent some time just working and going like, well, this isn't what I want to do. Well, neither is this. This job also sucks.
Let me try this over here for a while.
But he's very outdoorsy. I think he did some ag stuff in high school. And so he's going to be like leading, I don't want to say leading hunting parties because that makes him sound like a caveman. But you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. He's like taking people out on the trail so they can go elk hunting and stuff. So
yeah, that's awesome.
I'm excited for him.
That's awesome.
And last but not least, listeners, I don't know if you can hear from the sultry sound of my voice, but I received a new mic for my birthday from an anonymous, as far as I can discern from your text, donor, and yourself and Tiffany pitching in. And I appreciate that because it is a lot of fun to have a new mic and to sound buttery and smooth. So.
Yeah, one of my very good friends has been listening to our podcast, and he came to me about a month ago and asked what he could do to help support the show. And I was like, oh, well, we're doing okay, whatever, you know, all the bills are paid, all that, and we're just having fun with it. He's like, no, seriously, like, what can I do for the show? Like, I want to write you a check right now. I was like, well, if there's one thing we would update, it would be Chris's microphone. Yeah. And he was like, how much is that? I gave him a number and he was like, all right, cool. And so Tiffany and I added on just a little bit to that. And we're really happy to be able to do that for you and for this show. So good luck, buddy.
Well, I really appreciate it. And just to tack on to that, listeners, if you have any connections in the like audiobook narration world or know anything about VO, mm-hmm. send us an email at twodudesandtunes@gmail.com because that's something I'm kind of growing an interest in. And now I have a mic that doesn't sound like trash. So it's not a tin can attached to string.
Hey, what you had was better than my first microphone. So,
was your first microphone a tin can and some string?
Pretty close. Pretty close. It was wireless, so it was just a tin can, but
oh, that's funny. And now we have an even more elaborate echo chamber to live in here with this podcast. It's just captured in higher digital fidelity. Well, I'm gonna stop screwing around and we should get into our album this week, Divide by Ed Sheeran, released March 3rd, 2017. Well, Wood, why don't you tell me about how this album made it onto your list?
So I was a fairly early adopter of YouTube back in the day. I believe it kind of hit, you know, the mainstream in 2006, 2007. And the organization I was working for at that time was really early about uploading tons and tons of content to it. And at the time, there was like a 10-minute upload limit, like crazy restrictive on what you could upload and how you could upload
it.
Wow. But I remember, you know, this is probably the wrong way to use this word, but this cheeky little redheaded kid loading songs onto this platform that only had, you know, several hundred thousand users at the time, not billions of users to what it's at now. And yeah, he was, you know, in 06, 07, probably what, 15 years old, 16 years old, like young kid loading this music up. And it was just him with a piano or him with a guitar or whatever. And so kind of fast forward to, you know, 2011, when Ed Sheeran released his first album, I remember thinking, this is that guy who's like on YouTube and was getting millions of views. One of his videos, I believe, is one of the first five videos to cross a million views. So, you know, you got Charlie Bit My Finger, and then down there, just shortly down the list, there's an Ed Sheeran song of him doing it. And so even when he was a young kid and I was barely out of high school, I thought his music was pretty good back then and enjoyed it. So in 2011, when he released his first album, I bought it and I enjoyed it a lot. One of the things we'll talk about a little bit here later on is kind of how I view his philosophy of music making, which I think is in direct opposition to your philosophy of music making. And that may be why I like him more than you will probably like him in the end. And this album came up the other day, I like left it with both my fingers crossed. Like, please don't hate this. Please don't hate this. Like, don't just absolutely one star this.
No.
But one of the things that I just think is so awesome about this album, Divide, is just how smart he is about his composition and the way he kind of curates a theme throughout the album. So we'll talk about that, I'm sure, too, because I've seen your show notes.
Yes, you already know.
When this album came out in 2017, Tiffany and I had just bought our first house. We moved in the end of January. The singles had come out before then. And when this album came out in March, I remember being here in this office surrounded by boxes, and most of those boxes are still in the closet 5 years later, but listening to this album for the first time up here on these studio monitors and just really drinking in the experience and really enjoying it. But that kind of Sid, I think it's important that before we get into this discussion, we define what Ed Sheeran is and what he is not in general. Ed Sheeran is not John Mayer. He's not Paul McCartney. He's not some massively intelligent singer-songwriter that's just burning up everything. He's extremely talented, but he's an entertainer more than he is a musician. And, you know, when I look at kind of the ethos that he brings to his music, I see more of the Garth Brooks entertainer, where he can get out there and he can do the parts and all that, but at the end of the day, he's really entertaining people, and that's what he's there to do, more so than create music that makes other musicians go, man, I wish I was that deep. You know, his audience is people who just want to be entertained more than people who want to be pushed in some way, you know, creative way. And I would say that between his family and himself and the trajectory that he's continued on throughout his early life, now that he's, you know, 30 years old or so, or in his late 20s at least, he is a skilled marketer, and he's remained true to who he is and what he is, even going back to those early YouTube days. So that's why this album made the list. I think it's a great album just in general, and I look forward to kind of talking through some of that and then talking about its impact on the way we consume music, you know, in the modern world. But I'm interested in what your preconceived notions of Ed Sheeran are.
So I didn't have much exposure to his music outside of what would play on the radio, right? So I heard Shape of You and Thinking Out Loud a ton And Shape of You is a song that was stuck in my head quite a bit, not just this past week listening to the album, but just in general, like when it came out, I had that stuck in my head, just ad nauseum. I'm in love with the shape of you. Was in blue like a magnet. And just like almost too much.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing I remember about Ed Sheeran is, of course, related to John Mayer in some way. There was a Jimmy Fallon bit that John Mayer did where he dressed up in like I think it was like a jean vest and a beard and a trucker hat. And the whole shtick was that he was insecure about being replaced by Ed Sheeran because Ed Sheeran was the musical guest and John Mayer was playing the part of this like washed up guitarist. But I didn't, you know, I didn't really have much knowledge about Ed Sheeran outside of like thinking like, oh, that's the guy who's like on the mind of every 14 and 15 year old girl, which I shouldn't put it that way because that's really like makes it sound super derisive. But I don't know. I didn't know that he got his start on YouTube. And that kind of tracks with the way his music is.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I kind of felt like, or well, one of the things that occurs to me now that you've said that is his music has a very simple quality to it that reminds me of a lot of like looping musicians. Like if you listen to people who do musicians with little loopers. So for the listener, a looper is a little pedal that you can use to record yourself playing in real time and play back. And so a lot of what those musicians do is they'll start with a very simple element and add and subtract things to create their song. And it's a thing that I think a lot of buskers do, you know, street performers, that kind of thing. And so I think YouTube lends itself well to that. And I'm wondering how much of that, if I had that context, might have made me a little less critical of it.
So he is a notorious looper. He does a lot of that in general. So
Notorious Looper is also my SoundCloud rap project.
But it's not your acrobatics group.
No. Yeah. Coming to Las Vegas, in a casino near you. But, and you know, I feel like as I'm saying this, like, I don't want to come off as bashing his work because none of this album seemed like poorly thought out or bad.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's definitely a very skilled musician. Like even just as far as his voice goes, like he's a really talented singer.
Yeah, I really like his voice. One of the things I like about his voice, and we've talked about it with Jack Johnson and John Mayer, to name two recent-ish names from our podcast, that he's performing and his voice is so effortless. Like, he's all over the place vocally. He's got a lot of range. He's got a lot of... There are a couple of songs where I feel like he's a little bit pitchy, but there is a lot of just ease and comfort and self-assuredness in what he's doing and the way he's doing it that comes across not necessarily amateurish, but confident in just being himself.
Yeah.
And I mean, you look at how the guy dresses, you read, you know, everybody's read about the fact that he buys all his clothes from a secondhand shop and then donates them right back to the same secondhand shop when he's done with them. Like the guy is pretty self-assured in who he is and what he is to the point of not being, you know, too worried about what other people think about him. So I think his vocal chops kind of lend to that. And I think it's really good.
Yeah. He's very, it's funny your note about self-assuredness because he does kind of give off a lot of confidence. And I have a note in here about kind of being at like feeling at odds with the amount of polish on this album, but I wonder if that was maybe more the production of the album and not his voice per se. You know, because that's, it's a thing that producers and like just musicians and musicians in general do right now, which is just auto-tune and quantize and just like perfect this stuff into oblivion. Mm-hmm. And so I wonder if I would be even more impressed with his voice if I got to hear it, I don't know, like live maybe. I mean, big productions like that usually have auto-tune on the voice, like even live. But you know what I mean? Like if I just saw Ed Sheeran in a coffee shop, I think I might enjoy his music a little bit more as opposed to, you know, the like super compressed pop star voice that I got from this album.
No, I agree.
But I mean, even with that, like as far as somebody, and I don't know, maybe you can fill me in on this. I don't know how much of his music that he writes, but the melodies that he sings are really catchy. Like Bibia, Bay, Yeah, Yeah, Dive, and New Man had melodies that I enjoyed that kind of stuck in my head that I thought were really good. And so I don't know if he writes those or if he's just performing them and somebody else wrote them.
So according to our Lord and Savior Wikipedia, every track on this album, he is the primary listed writer for the track. He wrote the lyrics exclusively. There are certain tracks, or most of the tracks, have a co-writer of some kind on them. But he's, you know, the first name on the list for all of them. And we're going to talk a little bit about that here in a little bit, going into your polished comments. But before we do that, let's talk a little bit about the makeup of the music itself on the album. Kind of what was your takeaway on that?
So I felt it's hard. I find it difficult to criticize stuff that I find to be really well done, but also bland, because I don't know exactly what my problem with it is. Mm-hmm. And you know, there doesn't have to be a specific hang up that I have for everything. You and I have both encountered stuff where we just went like, I don't know, man, it's not for me.
It just doesn't work, dude.
Yeah. It just, yeah. And I think that might be part of it is he writes songs in a very radio friendly, kind of like keep it simple, stupid pop song style, which, you know, I'm sure that the astute listener could probably comb through past episodes and go, well, now, wait a minute, Chris, you said that you liked this and that song is just verse, chorus, bridge, chorus out.
We did a CCM album. So, yeah, you know,
you know, and I remember being like, I remember being less hard on that than I thought I would be. But I don't know. Part of it is just the simplicity of the music doesn't always do it for me on this album. Like I felt like there weren't a ton of bridges to some of these songs. I didn't sit down and crunch the numbers because I'm lazy, folks, but
we also have full-time jobs and this is a hobby. It's not lazy. Exactly. It's we got to get paid somewhere else.
I don't know why we're being so defensive. You get what you pay for, audience. Appreciate it. And that may just be, you know, you mentioned that he does not necessarily, he's being an entertainer. He doesn't necessarily write stuff with an eye towards complexity. Mm-hmm. And I think in some ways, depending on the kind of person you are, being a musician can hamper your ability to consume just basic music, because there's nothing wrong with pop music inherently. It is what it is, just like any other genre of music, you know. I don't know. I just, some of it was a little simplistic. There were some really personal tunes that kind of broke that like pop veneer that I really enjoyed, Supermarket Flowers, which did in fact make me tear up a little bit at work, which I was like, no, there's a bunch of dudes around.
And you're about to have to admit you're listening to Ed Sheeran while operating a forklift. I'm listening to Ed
Sheeran. But it was good. It was good. Like it, and maybe that's some of what bothers me is with some pop artists, you kind of get a glimpse of what they could be if they weren't chasing a specific formula. And maybe that's me assigning motive to people that I don't know. But, you know, like, there were some really fun personal songs. Castle on the Hill, he sang about like growing up like on the rougher side of town and all the people that he grew up with kind of growing up and losing aspects of their childhood. Save Myself, he was just kind of talking about like struggles that everybody has, you know, with self image and making mistakes and that kind of thing. So I don't know if the pop just comes off as impersonal to me.
Yeah.
But that was kind of, that was what I felt listening to the whole thing. But I think you got something else entirely out of it, or you just aren't, you don't have a music theory stick up your butt about things. So
I do have a music theory stick up my butt. It's just a different one than yours, I think.
We went to different stores.
I think that it's an interesting point of view that you kind of perceived this album as being kind of impersonal through its pop veneer, if you will. One of the things that I have, you know, heard Ed Sheeran say in interviews over the years and have seen him comment on is that he writes the lyrics to his songs based on what he's feeling in the moment or based on stories, things that he's imagined himself being put through. And in many cases, things he's actually gone through. And there are numerous, you know, sessions of him sitting down, and just about every song on this album is actually based in some personal event or something that helped shape him into the person he is today. And so lyrically, when you look through this album, even a couple of the songs that I don't necessarily like, you can take away what he learned through the experience that he's relaying there. You know, Castle on a Hill, shoot, I should have the track list open in front of me so I could do this professionally. Like I know what I'm talking about.
Hey, did we not just talk about the kind of monetary value that this represents to people?
Eraser is the track I was trying to come up with. The first track on the album is a really driving pop tune that talks about, you know, he's come so far from where he started, you know, as a poor kid in, you know, England and, you know, not a dollar to his name. And now he's a megastar and he knows what people are trying to get out of him. And he knows just how far he can fall and the consequences of a misstep here or there, like the pressures of being a megastar. And he's a phenomenal megastar. He's not playing on, you know, he's not playing in Dad's 84 Trans Am or anything, but he's all over everything else. He's not
coming to Lubbock, I know that.
Actually, you might want to check his tour. I think he's coming pretty close.
he's past the threshold where Lubbock is no longer underneath his radar. He has the money and time to just go everywhere. Coming to Midland, Odessa.
Exactly.
Ed Sheeran.
Like, I feel like Midland this time.
But I saw Ed Sheeran perform in Tulia
at the State Fair. Lions
Club. Yeah, exactly. It was amazing.
But so the point of all of that is just to kind of say, when this album released, he was 25 years old. And I think what you may be perceiving as impersonal is the fact, think about music you wrote when you were 25 and you were trying to explain who you are, what your feelings are. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, there's a certain lack of life experience and having enough distance on those moments to actually understand what those moments mean or meant. And so I look at it more as a, here's a guy who's processing things that he's gone through in the last 5 or 6 years, and he doesn't have enough life experience to do it in a way that seems personal. Like it's still a cold, these are the facts kind of thing. And you throw pop music on top of that, and that's kind of where you end up.
Yeah, and that's what I was just about to say. I think some of it is just a personal problem. Not a personal problem. It makes it sound like I have a grudge with the guy. I don't. He seems lovely. Do.
He's super rich and super talented, and I'm not.
Well, thee and me. That's why we're both doing this podcast. But, you know, I think that's what I was saying about, you know, if you get deep in the weeds with an instrument and really just go off the deep end trying to, like, discover new things or whatever, I think it's easy to miss the forest for the trees. And just to point out, like, I wouldn't say at all that I hated this album, but I think I probably robbed myself of some enjoyment just by bringing expectations to it that I probably shouldn't have. And, you know, I try to approach each album during the week, or each of yours, because I have a bunch of preconceived notions of my own, which is why we're doing this podcast, you know. But for your albums, if I haven't already heard them and don't already love them, I try to come at it without biases. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think that's just a stumbling block that I have personally, is that if I hear stuff that is polished like this and glossy, I automatically kind of have blinders up to go like, well, I mean, what is the content of this really? When in fact, as you've pointed out, and I've even brought up a little bit, you know, he's talking about real stuff. It's not as impersonal probably as I assumed it to be. It's just that, like you were saying, he's young and he's making pop music, and so it's going to sound a certain way.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk a little bit about instrumentation on this album. So you've mentioned that it sounds a little bit loopy and it's simple in general. What are some of the things that you saw in this album musically that worked for you or didn't work for you? I'm interested in that.
Well, as a guitarist, he's got like, I don't know, he's got kind of a fun sensibility. Like, you could definitely hear the, I don't know, there's just a something about YouTube guitarists. They have a certain, I don't know, a lot of them,
they don't have a record label. They can do whatever they want.
Yeah. And that can be good. And it can also mean there's kind of a homogeneity, mm-hmm, about everything, because the algorithm likes what the algorithm likes.
Everything is Stairway, boys.
But I did like it. Like, Eraser has a really fun riff. Like, he's got some neat acoustic stuff, which I wouldn't say I balk at acoustic, mm-hmm, material, but he does something like slightly different, in as much as he's writing these kind of fun, funky riffs, but a lot of times they're on acoustic. I guess just because the format on YouTube, it's a lot easier to just stick a mic on your acoustic or plug it in, mm-hmm, and run some, run a compressor and whatnot through it. But he even does some like John Mayer things, which I hate to bring it back to John Mayer because this podcast is like 2/3 Mayer cast, but,
we keep reaching out to his representation and they keep not responding. So,
yeah. Did you see, I don't know if you saw, did you see the other day somebody posted, or there's a video making the rounds of him playing at like, some event in Los Angeles where he was playing with a youth band.
Really?
Yeah. He plays Gravity with this, youth like community band or something. And they're so good. That's it made awesome. Me so envious to see people like 16 and 17 years old just blowing me out of the water. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. He has kind of some John Mayer tendencies, but without the incredible chops of John Mayer. And so even though I kind of felt like, oh, I should really be, negative about this because he's just jumping on a bandwagon from that time period or whatever, just kind of liked it. Mm-hmm. Like, I felt like his John Mayer impression was good. I just enjoyed it.
A little bit better than an SNL impression, but entertaining.
Yeah, exactly. But But kind of beyond the guitar playing, I think his style in general was what I sort of had the most problems with, because I felt like he kind of ping-ponged between a lot of different styles. There was like multicultural Ed Sheeran, right? So BBA Baye was like Afropop, Galway Girl and Nancy Mulligan were his like Irish jigs that you could imagine being played like the bottom levels of the Titanic. There was like Barcelona, which was very Spanish. But then there's hip hop Ed Sheeran. So like Eraser, Shape of You, New Man were kind of this weird blend of acoustic stuff, but also like synthesized beats and like very much in the style of like rap and hip hop. And then there's John Mayer Sheeran, which was basically just limited to like ballads in 6/8 time signature. So like Dive, Perfect, How Would You Feel?
So you must not have read my show notes, and I'm going to read you a show note that's supposed to be later on in the show, but right now is the perfect time to drop it in, and you haven't stolen my thunder because you didn't read the show note.
Yes.
What did you think about the solo for Dive?
So that it's where that for me is where the style thing breaks down, because it was very much in the style of John Mayer, right? Like sounded like he played it on a Strat through the kind of amps that John Mayer would use. But there's just something missing, because it's not enough Ed Sheeran. Like whatever the musician he is, I want more of that and less of the like, this is proven popular with test audiences, so I'm going to do this. And that might be a little cynical and unfair. Like we're all playing basically whatever our influences are. But so
let me stop you there before you dig your hole any deeper and tell you who actually played that guitar solo.
Was it John Mayer?
No, it was not. Even better than that. Sir Eric Clapton, Order of the British Empire, played the guitar solo in Dive as a cameo. So would you like to recant any of that?
Goddammit. Well, so what's interesting about that is that, like, I don't know, it almost feels like a snake eating itself, because John Mayer has said, but I still feel sheepish because it was Eric Clapton of all people. And so now I'm in the awkward position of going, you know, Eric Clapton's John Mayer impression sucks. Which is a real weird, awkward space for me to be in right now.
In your defense, in the album liner notes, he's credited as it's some single name guitar player that's credited, like a pen name basically. And it's only in the deluxe edition that they put in the notes that parentheses Eric Clapton.
So, did they call him Slow Hand? Was that his? I don't know. He's got like 1,000 nicknames. Did they credit him as God? That's what I want to know. Is he the lead guitar, track 6, God?
They credited him as Angelo Mysterioso.
Oh, come on. That's silly. I don't feel so bad.
So you wouldn't have known just looking at it. It was... when I started doing research for the album, I was like, huh, that's Eric Clapton. Gotcha.
That's how you know I didn't do my research, as I went, oh, I've got this figured out. That's just Ed Sheeran doing a bad John Mayer impersonation. But outside of feeling sheepish about that, because that's pretty silly. I just felt like, I don't know, style is such a hard thing to pick apart. And I found myself going like, okay, well, he's done these like 3 or 4 different styles of song, but they felt like him doing a style. They didn't feel as, I don't know, organic or holistic or whatever the phrase is you want to say. Mm-hmm. And And, you know, that may be that he's young, or it may be that I'm just an old codger. But that was my hang up instrumentally, was like, instead of getting a unified, like, Ed Sheeran, mm-hmm. I got like Ed Sheeran doing this, Ed Sheeran doing that, Ed Sheeran doing the other. And I wanted to hear just what he himself would play, like his bedroom.
So I think that's fair. And I don't entirely disagree with you. I think it would be cool to have just Ed Sheeran be Ed Sheeran. Mm-hmm. I think that the style of each one of these songs was intentionally picked on this album because they are personal to him. And so, you know, Bibby, whatever. I'm terrible at it. So. Yeah, exactly. That one. I mean, that's a song that's inspired by a trip he made to Madagascar and something people told him while he was there. So cool. I mean, that makes sense that it's English Afropop because he is English and he's putting his own kind of English spin on something he heard or experienced there. His mom's side of the family is Irish. His dad's side is English. So songs like Galway Girl and Nancy Mulligan, his mom is an Irish lass. Like, it all kind of fits in with, I'm telling these stories and I'm taking the theme that was happening to me when I experienced those stories and put it into this song. So I get that the album is kind of disjointed from the aspect of, it's not like last week's album where it's John Mayer making fun of the 80s and it's 12 tracks in a row of 80s music. This is more a, here are some stories and I'm trying to set them in the moments that they're supposed to be and in the locations that they're supposed to be. And I'll admit, and I'm not even grudging, like I admit that a few of them are kind of ham-fisted. Like it's a mesh that doesn't quite work with his style. But anyhow, I think it's a good observation on your part too.
Yeah. And I don't want to harp too badly on that because style is such a subjective thing, you know, because where I am going like, okay, well, it sounds like he just like aped a bunch of this stuff and I didn't like that. It wasn't like consistent. Somebody else might look at it and go, well, no, look at how many different styles he's capable of. Like he has like a more varied palette and you just don't get it. So I can kind of understand that.
It's like me harping on Herbie Hancock's whistle thing from Africa, and then you putting me right back in my place. Like, actually, would.
Yeah, like, yeah.
Oh, I'm a terrible human being. Never mind.
This is the this is the episode where I get actually'd. I mean, ask anybody. I could stand to be taken down a peg or two. But the album that I keep thinking of, that I thought of with this album, and actually now that we're talking about it in relation to the John Mayer album, Paul Simon's Graceland, you know, I felt like with that album, he spent some time in Africa or something like that and brought in African musicians and had this like kind of Afro pop style throughout the whole thing. And it was very much Paul Simon, if I'm not mistaken, I think, I mean, a lot of his biggest songs are on there. You Can Call Me Al, Diamonds on the Soles of Her Shoes. You know, he's got all this stuff that is equally Afropop and equally Paul Simon. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know if maybe I just wanted one style spread out more evenly throughout the whole thing. But I think it's fair to temper my criticism and say that maybe the stylistic thing is a hang up for me and not an actual flaw in the album.
I would say that it's probably a flaw in the album. Like, I think that that's a legitimate criticism. I think we also have to go back to remembering Ed Sheeran started out as a YouTube star. He wasn't releasing whole albums. In fact, between 06 and 2011, he didn't release any whole albums. It was all just singles. And, you know, you write a song, you release a song, and it does well or it doesn't do well. And so the idea of curating an album of music, at least to this point in Ed Sheeran's career, not really something that I think he's really focused on, you know?
Yeah. Well, and the thing that I think goes along with any musician our age and younger, the internet provides just a ton of opportunities to be exposed to different styles of music, mm-hmm. different cultures. But I think there's something missing from having an actual physical experience with the human beings who are doing, who are part of whatever culture that you're exposed to. Like another song that I kind of think of is, I'm blanking on it and it's making me really irritated. It's the Kashmir by Led Zeppelin. There we go. I finally drug it out. That was written by Robert Plant out of his experiences in the physical place. Mm-hmm. Same thing with Paul Simon. You know, he was in a physical place and had this experience with these people, which is not to say that you can't, you know, you can't capture the essence of a thing by just reading about it or watching videos. I don't know exactly, but I wonder if because of his coming up in the internet age, he had a lot easier time getting a handle on that stuff, you know, on the internet. I mean, you said like he actually went to Madagascar, so there's that. So I may be just sticking my podcast foot in my podcast mouth, but you know what I'm saying, mm-hmm. right? Like I wonder how much experience kind of affects those things. Whereas like the internet might make it different and less like authentic.
In the past, we've marveled at the limited artists who contribute to certain albums. So like John Mayer's Continuum album, I think it only had like 9 artists who performed music on that album with John Mayer. We've talked about just how tight certain groups are. George Strait, for instance, has used the same band of, you know, 10 guys for his entire career, touring and recording. Like all of that stuff kind of combined together. Ed Sheeran is totally different from that. This mm-hmm. album by itself has 87 credited musicians on it. Mm. And the thing about it, and I didn't go verify it, but you start scrolling through the names of these people and you see, on Galway Girl or Nancy Mulligan, like all the names, the last names of all the musicians are like O'Sullivan and O'Brien, like they're wow. Irish names. And then you get into some of the more Afro pop styled songs and it's very African names of the artists. I mean, yeah. So even though he's adopting a style, the musicians on that song that support him are, it would seem to be artists who are very familiar, at least with that style of music, or are recognized for being artists in that particular genre itself. And a certain yeah. extent of that has to feed into, even if your experience is just the internet experience, that has to help feed into what the final product ends up being. I was blown away by 87 different people. And a lot of them is, you know, chorus for one song or, you know, whatever their credit is, just yeah. like you did this one thing. So.
Yeah. It's funny that you say that because another band that's on our list, we haven't gotten to yet. Steely Dan, they're kind of infamous for that. Walter Becker and Donald Fagen are kind of notorious for like, we've got to get this song sounding exactly perfect. So let's bring in mm-hmm. 5 drummers to get this one like song right. So I don't know. Maybe it is just that this wasn't for me.
Yeah.
And it's authentic and good and has different styles. And I'm just a curmudgeon. I think that might be the wall we're running into here.
Before we talk about critical reception, I did want to talk a little bit about Ed Sheeran, the artist, and just the scale of the numbers that he's putting out there into the ether. I was talking about Ed Sheeran to my dad, who's 61 years old and has an 18-year-old daughter. So you'd think he's kind of bridging that divide of, you know, the old people who don't know what's going on in the world. And then he's got an 18-year-old daughter. So maybe, you know, some of that'll cross over. And he didn't he didn't know who Ed Sheeran was.
Wow.
And I said, okay, Dad, Ed Sheeran, the album that we're talking about on the podcast this week, peaked at number one on every chart in the world in 2017. And it peaked at number one on most worldwide year-end charts. It actually did not quite make that number in the US. It peaked at two for the worldwide year-end chart, but it made it to one for a certain period of time. 2017 was a good year for pop music, for those of you who aren't paying attention. But this album, Divide, is still on the US Billboard 200 chart 5 years after its release. In 2017, it was number four, 2018, number five, 2019, 31, 2020, 65, and so far through 2021, it's 70. So this album has a lot of staying power with people, and part of the reason that it does is the number of sales it's had. It's had 7.5 million album sales worldwide, which that's pretty impressive for only a 5 year span, considering a lot of the albums we've looked at.
Yeah.
Ed Sheeran, the artist, and this is just looking at Spotify numbers, because Apple's, you know, mean and doesn't tell us any of this stuff. So thanks, Apple. He's the third most streamed artist on Spotify all time. Monthly, he's number three. Justin Bieber is number one at 79.15 million listens per month. The Weeknd is number two with 73.35, and then Ed Sheeran is number three with 70.45 million streams per month. He's the first most followed artist on Spotify, so the number of people who subscribe to hear his new music, at 83.46 million people following him. All time, Ed Sheeran has more than 10 billion, that's with a B, streams on Spotify. So that's not counting all the YouTube stuff that he's done. It's not counting any of the Apple stuff, any of the Apple sales. 10 billion Spotify streams. If you were to divide that by seconds since 2011, when his first album actually came out on September 9th of 2011, he would have 32 plays of his music per second to get to 10 billion. Like, the guy is a rock star. And my dad didn't know who he was, like, at all. I was That's like, so hold up, dude.
Given the numbers that you've just listed, it makes your dad sound like he lives in, like,
under a rock with no internet
chamber. Yeah, exactly. Oh, man, that's funny.
Oh,
wow. So where do we stand on, like, Spotify downloads? How close are we to this, you think?
We're getting actually pretty close to 2,500 downloads on Spotify. So, you know, it's not the world's worst thing ever.
Are you serious right
yes.
now? What are you all doing? What's wrong with you? That's funny. Man, that's incredible. 32 plays
a second, per second. Every second since September 9th, 2011.
I would be so curious to hear an expert in the music industry talk about what goes into that, because his music is good. It has appeal, like, but I just wonder what it takes from a PR machine to keep numbers up like that. And how many small countries does Ed Sheeran own? Is he trying to bring back the British Empire?
I'm actually really proud of him from that perspective. I didn't put it in the show notes or anything, but the guy is, in the words of Michael Scott, a great philanderer. I mean, philanthropist. We mentioned a little bit earlier in the show, or I mentioned a little bit earlier in the show, the guy does not buy new clothes. He buys from essentially the British version of Goodwill and then drops them back off when he's done with them there, or auctions them off for charity or whatever.
Yeah.
And he's really involved with all sorts of different, you know, underprivileged children's charities kind of around the world. He's just an everyman. I mean, he's not Jake Gyllenhaal. No offense to him. He's not the most handsome person who ever walked the planet Earth. He looks like Ron Weasley, but but he is just a badass and a good person in general. And hearing songs like Eraser, for instance, which I drew a lot of parallels in that song to Billy Joel's Entertainer song. Hearing how self-conscious he is about the position he is in and the platform that he has to use for good or evil, and how conscientious he is of it at 28 years old or 29 years old, whatever he is at the moment, it's just amazing. So I really appreciate that about him.
Yeah, I didn't know that he was such a philanthropist. That's pretty incredible. Sounds like a regular Tom Hanks.
There you go.
Pop music. Well, do we want to touch on critical reception before we critically receive this?
Absolutely, this album?
All right. Well, Wood, why don't you tell me, what did the critics have to say about this album? It was obviously well received in some circle because it's got 32 plays a second or something like that.
Well, that's him as an artist as a whole.
Just period. But what chunk of those 32 is Divide? I'm sure it's a pretty big portion.
It's a pretty big portion. I believe the song Shape of You has like 2.5 billion listens by itself.
That's amazing.
Like they had to add numbers to the counter on Spotify in order to get up to the number of streams that one had.
Some mathematician at Yale was going, "We don't have numbers this high. Quick, add more numbers."
Well, as always, I went ahead and pulled the Metacritic for this album, which averaged 17 total reviews to give us a 62 out of 100, which means mixed to positive reviews overall. And I think that's fair. I mean, you and I kind of have a mixed, you know, we average out to probably about a 62 at the end of the day.
Yeah, that seems about right.
Some of the highlights I saw looking through these were Mara Johnston of the Rolling Stone, which gave it a 4-star review, commenting that Ed is still showcasing pop savvy on Divide, and going on to say that he doubles down on his blend of hip-hop, bravado, and everyday bloke songwriting that helped him break out at the turn of the decade. Rosen O'Connor from The Independent also gave the album a 4-star rating, claiming that the album leans a little aside from Sheeran's own talent and that it was astonishing for its sheer ambition alone. I think that speaks well of his use of so many different artists and letting them showcase their talent as well. And then finally, for me on the positive side, Mark Kennedy of the Associated Press, after commenting on the album's missteps, said that it's certain to add listeners, subtract a few weary of his inconsistency, but definitely multiply his bank account, and ultimately called Sheeran a special talent. And then there are a couple here that I wrote down for you to read because I thought they were more emblematical of your opinion.
Yeah, so some of the critical reviews, Harriet Gisbone of The Guardian gave the album a 2-star rating out of 5, calling it no less calculating than his peers at the very top level of pop stardom. And I think calculating is probably a good way to put how I felt about maybe some of the impersonal aspects of it. Mm-hmm. And then the other review here, Laura Snapes of Pitchfork, which, you know, Pitchfork's going to have something to say about it. She gave it a 2.8 out of 10. We can only assume. They never actually say. It may just be a 2.8 out of
50, it's out of 10. 100. In college, that's you failed.
Yeah, 2.8 out of 10 is not a good grade to get on your quiz. But she said, considering that Sheeran is among the most successful songwriters in the world, a lot of his lyrics do not even scan. And I think that was probably kind of how I felt about it. The songs where he did talk about himself or not just himself, but, you know, his struggles as, you know, a famous artist or his mom's passing or his childhood growing up poor. And I think one of the songs too, he mentions, his grandmother mm-hmm. and his grandfather, mm-hmm. right? That's the stuff I wanted more of. And I do think that, the album's called Divide. So he's talking about a lot of like relationship angst. Some of that stuff probably was really intensely personal for him, and I could have used more personal details, which, you know, maybe that's not fair considering John Mayer doesn't necessarily write these super autobiographical tunes either, and I'm a lot less hard on his music than I am Sheeran's. But anyway, I think those reviewers kind of picked up on what I kind of had hang-ups about. So interesting, very interesting.
Yeah. Well, let's get on to our reviews. How do you feel about that?
Let's do it.
All right. Before I let you get to your review, I want to remind our listeners of our review scheme. We rate every album on a 1-6 guitar string model. One string being just, ugh, really? This is something that was committed to tape? Pass. And 6 being, come on, man, I got it on an 8-track and cassette tape and CD and laser disc and DVD. And I've got the commemorative reunion album and the remix. Like, it's just awesome. So where does this fall for you, Chris?
Okay, well, you know, I've mentioned before on the show that as a younger music lover, I went out of my way to dump on pop music, contemporary music. Oh, I didn't like it. And I was somebody who griped loudly about how good music used to be. I am not that person anymore, thankfully. Otherwise, this would be a really boring podcast. And even if it is boring to our listeners, at least we have more mature viewpoints than we did when we were children, right? You know, like it probably would be more entertaining if I launched into some sort of snooty polemic about like, oh, this is vapid drivel. Blah, blah, blah. But I don't really have that gear in me when it comes to albums like this. Divide certainly wasn't my cup of tea. But I would be lying if I said it was completely devoid of pleasure. I didn't like it at all. As I kind of hinted at, I like Ed Sheeran's choruses. And I think his guitar playing is really pretty decent. Like, I enjoyed it. I think some of his, like, I don't know. I had in my review, listeners, just to give you a peek behind the curtain, that I had a little bit of a problem with some of his more like ethnically inspired music. But after kind of hearing that he had real deal musicians in there with him to capture those styles, I think maybe what we're running up against is this just wasn't my cup of tea. I think that I enjoyed those songs maybe a little bit more than I thought I did. One of them actually wound up being my favorite. And you know, I've also mentioned that Ed Sheeran has some fleeting moments of honesty and emotion. And that stuff didn't feel calculated or forced. So I don't know. This album's faults aren't really glaring enough for me to rant about them. Sure, Ed Sheeran's voice feels pretty safe. The production is really carefully crafted to be ear-catching. But I don't know. I can't crucify Ed Sheeran for playing to his strengths. That's not very fair. And I would say, just to sum it up, this wasn't a totally forgettable experience, but I'm also not the audience for this kind of music. I'm going to give this album 4 strings because you can't have half a string. I would give it 3.5 strings, but as anybody who plays guitar knows, a half a string is not a string at all. It's just some trash that's cluttering up your guitar and you need to change your strings. So I'm going to give this 4 strings and say that really, like, for the most part, I enjoyed it.
Cool. Well, I'm glad you, for the most part, enjoyed it, because I know I was fingers crossed hoping you wouldn't just absolutely hate it when it came up.
You were fair to expect me to get on here and be like, oh, this dead gum pop music from this British part. Ram, 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 ram. But no, I enjoyed it.
Well, I think when I think about my review, Ed Sheeran is one of those artists that when I look at, I'm just dumbfounded by what they've been able to achieve and maintain in such a short period of time. I mean, we've all seen and heard the one-hit wonders of the world, but, you know, Ed Sheeran started coming up in 2005, 2006 online, and since then has constantly remained at the forefront of both social media and in the music world as well. He's been on the charts just about the entire time. And it isn't uncommon to see talent launched into spotlight only to have it relegated to a discount rack like another can of beans. Thanks, Billy Joel's Entertainer, for that turn of phrase. But Ed Sheeran was able to capitalize on his talent and his marketability and his ability to convey messages and bring that early success and sustain it to a level that I'm just blown away by. He's been a constant musical force for the last 10 years. He's everywhere. He's in TV shows. He's on films. He does everything. It's crazy. He plays himself.
He plays Game of Thrones.
There you go. I mean, he's all over the place. One of the things that I really love about him is he's unapologetically English. I mean, I think back to like the Beatles. Everybody knows they're a British pop band, but they were trying to be the American version of what an English band should be. The Stones, all those different groups that have English backgrounds, but try to fit the American mold of what rock music should be or what pop music should be. And here's Ed Sheeran just doing his thing, and he sings with his accent. He performs music about his home or the places he's been, and is just totally unapologetic about it. And it's fresh in that we in America don't get to experience that very often. I'm sure there are lots of other talented artists in England or in the UK that perform that kind of music, but it doesn't become big here where we are. And so we have this very Amero-centric view of what music should be. And here's Ed Sheeran saying, well, this is what it can be elsewhere too. And I love that about him and this album. And we miss that from our modern musical diets for the most part. Chris mentioned the whole exploring different styles and finding balance throughout this and how he thought it was kind of a mismatch. For me, I look at that as just him trying to find his way and being more single focused than album focused. We commented on the whole preteen girl element. There is a lot of drive to his stardom that is that, and he feeds into that really well. But I think it comes down to the fact that he's a pop artist and he isn't really creating music that panders to you and me, the music critic, or, you know, our parents, the people with the 78 Trans Am. He's making music for people who are younger than us for the most part, and for our generation who isn't focused on what the experience of the album is, when I can go stream just the 2 singles I want and not listen to the rest of the album at all. Let's see. Oh, yeah. His music is entertaining to me. I find myself wanting to hear more, and I've talked about how much I like his voice. And I feel pretty strongly about his songwriting. I think that he does a good job of writing simple music. It's not earth-shattering or earth-mind-bending, but it is good for what it is. And, you know, we've given a lot of slack to people like Jack Johnson and the White Stripes and, you know, other groups who have followed kind of that same simpler is better, you know, keep it simple, stupid kind of mantra. And here he is doing it in his own way, and I have a lot of respect for that. So All that said, I'm going to give this album 5 full strings, and I wish him continued success. Stay who you are. Stay true.
Well, I think the continued success will not be hard for him to achieve. He's already shot the moon, as it were. But that's great. I'm glad that we were able to discuss it. I'm glad that I haven't been so entrenched in my anti-pop music domain as to not enjoy it. Speaking of anti and pro, why don't we talk about our favorite and least favorite tracks?
Yeah, Chris. So for me, my favorite track on this album really came down to a tie, and it's two of the more ethnic tracks on the album, and that's Galway Girl and Nancy Mulligan. Both of these are very Irish forward. You know, they've got the Irish flute and the very forward tone of kind of Irish jaunty music. And I'm going to give the favorite track to Nancy Mulligan because of the story that it tells. I think it's the most personal story on the album. Mm-hmm. And between you, me, and the dear listener and everybody online who's read about this song, this is a song about his grandparents. And I'm going to really mess this up. His grandfather was Catholic and his grandmother was Protestant. And this was at a time in the 1960s when the Catholics and the Protestants didn't mingle. And it was a very Romeo and Juliet, we will kill each other over this kind of thing. And so
the Troubles, I think they call it.
Yes. And they ran away and got married. And so this song, Ed Sheeran wrote for his grandparents' 60th wedding anniversary. And it tells the story of Nancy Mulligan, his grandmother, running away with a man named William Sheeran and getting married at the county line. You know, they had to borrow a suit. You know, she wore her best dress and he had to borrow a suit. And it's just a wonderful family tune. And it's got probably the best chorus in the entire album. Like, I just love this song as a standalone song by itself, let alone what it means to him having wrote it. So that's my favorite. What was your favorite?
So my favorite track actually wound up being your least favorite.
Oh, boy. Why don't you tell me about your least favorite first, then?
Okay. My least favorite was Perfect. It was just a little ho-hum. And like I kind of said at the beginning of the episode, stuff like this that is so like technically well done, I almost have a hard time picking out like, well, this was a flaw and this was a flaw. So I just have to say like it was just kind of boring to me. Mm-hmm. It was another state ballad in an already crowded field. I don't know. It was just a little too polished and sounded calculated to make young girls cry. And it just kind of bored me. But was it a bad song? I don't think so. I just think it was not for me.
Yeah. Well, and that's really the way I feel about my least favorite. I'm going to go ahead and say my least favorite so you can have the last word since it was your favorite, if that's fair to you.
Oh, thank you. Sounds good to me.
My least favorite, I'm going to butcher the name again, is Bibia Bay Yay Yay. The song
you
for me.
You just got to remember the chorus. Bibi-ya-bay-yay-yay. You just got to sing it in your head every time. You'll get it right.
Which we've talked about before. You know, it's inspired by a trip to Madagascar that he actually had. It uses musicians from, you know, the African continent to kind of bring that sound and that feel alive. And it is a fun song. Like, the musically, it's fun. It's entertaining. It's interesting. I like what they do with a lot of the things. But I just do not enjoy the lyrics. It's all kind of mumbled the whole way through. Like, it sounds like you when you're talking into the side of your microphone instead of the part that actually picks up sound.
Hey, it's a new mic. I'm still getting used to
it. I had to get it in there.
I started this podcast before we officially began by speaking into the side of the mic instead of the top, which is somewhat akin to like standing to the extreme side of a movie theater and watching it like as if you're like bisecting it at a, like a 90 degree angle. I didn't know what I was doing.
new hypercardioid microphone, and it sounds like he's recording this through his phone. A flip
working.
Phone.
What's yeah. wrong with it?
Exactly. But that said, kind of like you with your least favorite, I don't hate this track. I enjoy this track for a lot of things. It's just the one that didn't make the cut for me. So why was it your favorite song?
So I think for me, the lyrics weren't even really a consideration because I couldn't tell you what they were outside of...
Exactly!
Come to the dark side. Yeah, yeah. But what I liked about it was I did like the like Afropop style of it. I like the guitar playing, man. I'm kind of a sucker for that. Like if you wrote a trash song but had really good guitar playing in it, mm-hmm. I'll still meet you halfway and be like, oh yeah, this is really fun. But it reminded me a little bit of Vampire Weekend's early stuff, if you've heard any of their mm-hmm. music, and it's another white dude doing Afropop. But I just kind of, I don't know, I just enjoyed it. It was fun. I had fun with that song. But I'm going to have to go back and look at the lyrics now because I'm curious what they were. Because, like I said, I don't know what they were.
I listened to this album probably 8 times all the way through this week. I had to drive to Houston and back, which is 6 hours round trip. And then I had a couple of other things that had me in the car a lot this week. And so it got a lot of airtime. And every time that track came on, it was like, what the heck is he saying?
What is he talking
like,
about?
Like even the name of the song, I would not be able to tell you what he was saying in the chorus if it wasn't the name of the song.
Yeah.
So yeah. It's just like, all right, whatever.
Yeah. I can understand that. Songwriting wise, not very strong.
Chris, this episode has gone over 1 hour and 15 minutes at this point. So I think time we go talk to the Oracle. She's been waiting.
Let's do it. Yeah, she needs to punch her time card and clock out.
The Oracle doesn't punch time cards. She's cooler than that. She's on salary.
She already knows when she worked.
Exactly.
She is the time card.
All right, so this week we're picking from your list. There's 34 albums left on it, so let's give it a go and see what we get. Number 13, which on your list is Fink's 2011 album Perfect Darkness. Another mope fest, huh?
It's another British mope fest, no less. We're doing a twofer on the British Isles.
Awesome, man. Well, I'm looking forward to it, getting to experience it with you. Folks, thank you so much for listening to our episode this week. We hope you enjoyed it just as much as we enjoyed the conversation. If you're feeling generous and kind and want to help us out a lot with all the algorithms, please rate and review the show on your podcasting platform of choice. We will read your comments and reviews on air, even if they're horribly mean to Chris and I, because part of me just likes being roasted. So, Chris, take it away.
All right. And if you want to get in touch with us to roast us or add a comment, God forbid you're trying to correct us on an inaccuracy, because for one thing, get a life, and for another thing, we don't fact check this. Come on. But if you want to contact us in any way, for any reason, hit us up at twodudesandtunes@gmail.com. And don't forget, you can also contact us and keep tabs on what we're doing on Instagram or Facebook. I kind of man the social media on the occasion. I've been known to miss a week or two. But hit us up. I need something to do at work when I'm desperately bored. Let us know what you thought of Divide and what you thought of this episode. And don't forget to tune in next Wednesday, when Wood and I return to the British Isles and get moody with an album from my list. Surprise, surprise.